Welcome to a new episode of Whiplash Agile, where we focus on the failures that are necessary to be successful on an agile journey, because there are always valuable lessons to be learned from someone else's struggles and stumbles. I'm Jeff Anderson, your host and CEO of Agile by Design. Welcome everyone to our next episode of Whiplash Agile. Today, I'm super excited to have Maria Muir here. Maria, welcome, you know, aboard to the show. How long have we known each other for?
Jeff, you know, I think we've known each other for like 15 years.
This is getting kind of scary, eh?
Yeah. It is.
So anyone else listening, I first met Maria virtually. Maria was my soulmate, my agile soulmate across the pond, as I would refer to you. We were both trying to do agile at Deloitte. We were both kind of like in a vast sea of traditional thinking and lots of skeptics and cynics. And you would kind of forward stuff that you'd been doing, and I'd forward you stuff that we were doing, and we'd constantly be staying in touch. So if I were to introduce Maria to the world, Maria is like the fellow agileist out of the consulting world who's basically cut her teeth on this before it was a thing, trying to help large organizations move to different ways of working, different ways of thinking, led the practice across the other side. And then recently, you've gone and joined a very unique organization, Safer, Super Happier, and you're the practice lead over, is it in Australia, or how do you describe that part of the world? It's more than Australia, right?
Yeah, it's more than Australia. I cover all of Asia Pacific, which is
all of Asia Pacific,
quite a large space.
Yeah. So head of Safer, Super Happier over Asia Pacific. Been doing all kinds of interesting transformations, working with clients at all levels, but especially at the executive and the strategy. You're a self-described strategist, a self-described knowledge worker savant, and I'm super happy to have you here, because whenever we talk, I always learn a whole bunch of new stuff. And whenever I look at your material, I always learn a whole bunch of new stuff. So welcome aboard, Maria.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Those words are all too kind. The only thing that's true there, Jeff, is yes, I do work now at Sooner, Safer, Happier. Yes, I have come from, being a consultant. I've been a consultant my whole career, and sharing like minds with you. And what amazes me is the fact that you can kind of find kindred spirit no matter where you are in the world. So that is what bonds us.
Awesome. I love it. So let's go back to the Deloitte days. You're kind of working part of a larger traditional firm. How did you get into this thing where, you know, called Agile? What brought you into this, you know, wanting to do things differently? Like what was your first foray into this, and how did that grow for you?
Yeah, so good question, Jeff. And it probably comes back to a little bit of what I've always found interesting. So I've always been interested in people. I've always been interested in systems, how people interact with each other, how people interact within the system, how systems are set up, what is made up of them, what data we need to have to understand how the system is operating, its health, which led me to do an economics degree. I then joined from that into a data and analytics group at Deloitte. So kind of my earlier parts of my careers have been in technology, but it's really always been about the system. And so by luck, by chance, I moved to Australia for, you know, kind of personal reasons. After I got married, decided to go on an adventure with my partner. So in 2010, we landed here. And the very first project that I was on was with the largest telco here in Australia. And the project was, the scope, the mission that we had was to basically redesign the SCLC process. But the CIO at the time wanted to use Agile. He wanted to leave Agile behind as his mandate. And to give you context on the market here in Australia in 2010, no one, and I think that's a, you know, not an exaggeration.
Yeah.
No one was familiar with the words. We didn't know what it was, didn't know what it meant. And so I've been on this fascinating, interesting kind of learning curve journey over the last, you know, 15 or so years to work out, well, what is this thing? How does it work? What does it mean? And how do we think about ways of working? So that's really kind of how it started, really by luck, I would have to say. And then continued through by passion, because I love people and systems.
What was it like being the agile evangelist, so to speak, in a large consulting firm?
Well, and so what I find interesting about that, Jeff, and even in itself, is when I then became, you know, super interested and had then, you know, kind of gone through my career of doing Agile in teams, then teams of teams. So kind of looking at how do we deliver programs of work, you know, business and technology, and then kind of enterprise Agile. But very early on, I had in my email signature at Deloitte, I had Agile enthusiasts.
Nice.
And so your question is funny because it brings me back to those times. I eventually kind of removed it after a period of time when everyone, you know, kind of knew who I was. I didn't need to say it. And so I've never really been an evangelist. I've always been, you know, an enthusiast, always a pragmatist, never a purist. So how I found it was, to be honest with you, it was super exciting and liberating because at Deloitte, actually, I was supported, enabled. Agile was a growing, you know, need from clients. I worked with a lot of early adopters in the early days with telcos and banks. I made partner because I created a business, a team, the Deloitte Enterprise Agility practice here in the region. So it was really good.
I actually found working in consulting, I probably didn't have as good of an experience as you did, but the one thing I did love is the opportunity to really help people at enterprise scale and treat this holistically right from the get-go. And I don't think a lot of other people, especially in 2010, there was not a lot of that opportunities going around, right? So by the time this stuff got popular, I already felt like I scraped my knees a whole bunch of times and, you know, I already tried all this kind of stuff and got to do it a little bit more of a creative way than you might have at some other places. So
yeah, and that's the thing. And so I don't think it was until, you know, a little bit later in 2017. So what happened for those listening who might not know, in Australia, after kind of going through the evolution of Agile and tech and people starting to realize and having people scrape their knees a little bit like you, like us, and then realizing from a business perspective that actually this thing is just not for the software developers. This thing is an actual mindset shift and we can apply it into marketing or ops or sales or other kind of context. And then thinking about how do we do it at the enterprise. We had one of our big four banks in 2017, Australia, New Zealand Bank, so ANZ, come out quite publicly and declare that they were going agile at scale. And so in 2017, it sent this ripple across across the industry, and not just in banking, but kind of in all sectors, because everyone had kind of cottoned on to this thing. And even at that point, I had already worked with, you know, oil and gas and mining and energy companies. So kind of it was the thing, like it was already mainstream by then. So it sent a bit of a ripple. And so it wasn't until kind of when we started to unpack enterprise agility and what does that mean? Because, you know, Jeff, as you would know, when we're starting to talk about those things, the core of how organizations operate, organize, and behave needs to start to evolve. And whether that's how you think about strategy, how you think about your funding models, how you then do, you know, planning, budgeting, forecasting, and I'll just pick those as examples. There's so many more. But it wasn't, I think, until I kind of got to there in my journey when you know, similar to how you butt up against in large organizations, some of that traditional mindset and the resistance from those kind of areas to start to change. It was then a little bit the same from a Deloitte perspective because, you know, we all needed to think about things differently too. So how do we do that?
So that leads me to, you know, fast forward a few more years. You're now at Safer, Sooner, Happier. What was the journey from and the decision making to go from Deloitte partner and into Safer, Sooner, Happier? And what do you think is different about Safer, Sooner, Happier, like the approach, the organization, you know? Yeah, because I feel like there's an evolution there, right? Inside of Safer, Sooner, Happier, that it doesn't belong solely to them, but they're definitely leading the way in a lot of ways where we're all thinking about this a little bit differently now.
Yeah, so I get the question a lot from people that know me, from people that, you know, I've kind of worked with over the years, like, why would you leave the comforts of your, you know, partner job at a big four? And so, like, I think for me personally, at the time, a couple of years ago, I was in search of what is my next leadership challenge. So I had basically spent the last, you know, more than a decade building up a business within another business. So I'd kind of, you know, already done the entrepreneur element of it. And so thinking, well, how do I stretch myself you know, what's the next thing to do? And so, yeah, so that was kind of the first thing. The second thing was I was starting to see a shift and maybe like I think COVID, the pandemic accelerated a few different things from a digital transformation yeah. point of view. But I also think that it started to shift a little bit about how clients or maybe it was my perception. I don't know. But, you know, how clients were starting to perceive the value of trusted advisors, the value of advice and kind of what help they were looking for. And so the shift that I was starting to see was the conversations that I was having with clients and with leaders and especially with executive teams was, I just want to talk to someone who's been there, done that, Maria. I don't want to talk to, you know, a team of, you know, a team of five or a team of 10 or a team of 20. Like what we do in the context of enterprise agility is the power of it, I find, comes from the lived experience yep. And being able to talk about the fact that you've scraped your knees a few times, but this is what you've learned and then how you've been able to then do something differently. So I was starting to see a shift in kind of, you know, buying behaviors, basically. So I was thinking about, okay, well, what might another way be? Because the business model at a big four or any kind of large consultancy is more a pyramid style structure, yeah. Less, you know, anyway, so there's some things that I thought maybe we needed, I could think about how I evolve that way, which then kind of leads me then to Sooner, Safer, Happier, because I met John Smart, who is the lead author of the Sooner, Safer, Happier book. So there's a book as well. And Miles Ogilvie. So we actually all worked together at Deloitte. So similar to you, Jeff, you were in Canada. I was in Australia, or I am still in Australia. They were in the UK. And, you know, from the power of the, you know, Deloitte network and the passion of the community, I met them about 5-6 years ago. My goodness, I don't like putting time on things. It makes me feel old. So I met them at Deloitte. We worked together and have always, you know, kind of stayed in touch just like I have with you. And so when I was thinking about, okay, well, how do I take my passion for an experience with business yeah. agility? How do I continue that? How do I maybe be an entrepreneur? How do I do something where it's got a little bit like a different business model to it? Because Sooner, Safer, Happier, we're a global company, but we're all experienced practitioners. And so the...
Yeah, there's just a bit of criticism that for your kind of big four consulting model to work, not everyone does it, but there's a bit of a backing up of the bus mentality and bringing people in who have less experience, you know, and then getting that experience to them as fast as possible, right? So there's a bit of the Deloitte fake it till you make it kind of type thing. So I guess with this model, it's you could say, no, we have the senior folks who really know it, and you're almost providing that extra executive presence, basically.
Yeah, and I think... to be honest with you, Jeff, I think we're all learning. So there's an element here of there's always, I've never done the same thing twice.
Yeah.
So I think the difference here, though, is how we help is different. So it's, you know, I guess even for me, it's not about 5 days a week, you know, with a large team. It's if what you need actually is a strategy offsite workshop, happy to help you with that. If what you need is, you know, a day or a couple of days a week, because that's the strategic advice and sounding board that you need, because actually you need to do this thing on your own, then that's how we're set up.
So you do much more bite-sized, less of the bigger footprint. Yeah, got it. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But more focused, I think, or kind of reinforcing that actually this is a relationship with the people over a long period of time. And we don't, you know... I guess the golden rule of consultancy is that you never want to be there forever and a day, and you shouldn't be, otherwise you haven't done something right. I think the same applies as a trusted advisor. You might be there a little bit more hands-on at the start to get it set up, but the relationship endures, and you might then come in a little bit later to, you know, see how it's going and help enable some things along the way. But yeah, it's a different mindset, I think, in terms of how you help, how you enable, how you provide that advice.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. That's what I thought I was going to be doing when I went independent as well. It was going to be just me and maybe one or two others. And we had I think I'm more in the older model where I've got like a couple of big clients and we've got not huge teams, but there's three or four people kind of doing it more what we did. So I'm not sure why that is, but I do see the value in being able to go in for a discrete workshop and then have the people do it for several months on their own, then come back and say, okay, let's have a look, you know, so that way you get more of that ownership onto the client themselves. So, you know, I have to dig into how I fell back into the old one. It wasn't on purpose. It's just the work and the value and the kind of clients we found, you know, needed or benefit from that kind of support. So that was a bit of an aside, because you got me thinking there for a second. When it comes to sort of the way that yourself and some others are describing the change in Safer, Sooner, Happier, it's a little bit different than the way maybe you always described it this way, but I would have described it a little bit differently in the beginning of my career than the way you are describing it. Can you like talk to our listeners and what that difference is and what parts resonate with you and how that's changed things for you?
So I think that some of the fundamental shifts, and I think this is really built up on the lessons learned from, you know, the capital A Agile, yeah, the capital T transformation programs. And so, like, I think the experience here, you know, in this kind of side of the world has probably been the same, you know, elsewhere. And so when I think of the Big Bang top-down push, often disguised, we use the words agile, but actually it's a cost out and we only focus on org structure as the change. And then from an agile perspective, the focus is then on frameworks and practices. Like, those are probably the three biggest learnings, I think, that this, you know, from an agile community we've had. And so the awakening that I think we've been having and what resonates with the better value, sooner, safer, happier is actually what we're talking about here. And I think we've always been talking about this, but we've lost it a little bit on the way, is, well, what outcomes are we actually trying to achieve? Like, this isn't change for change sake or agile for agile sake. It's how are we thinking about what needs to be different to enable strategy? And that's why I kind of always come back to that, because organizations, you know, groups of people exist for a reason and they're trying to deliver some value. So what is that? And, you know, most have ambition and growth and want to do something, you know, better. So, but there are also things that need to evolve in order to unlock that. And so when we think then of what do we need to optimize for, it's, you know, better quality. It's the value, the commercial outcomes that you're then going after. It's sooner. So how are we doing that, you know, with less, with better speed and responsiveness, so that we've got, you know, better time to value, better time to market. We need to do that safer. So this isn't, you know, the cowboys, wild, wild west. So whether you...
Isn't that what agile is? It's just what? You just kind of throw people into a room and you just hack away, right? No? Okay.
I love that one.
Yeah.
It's not that. And so how do we, even if you don't work in a financial services, we all have rules and regulations. Yeah. So there needs to be a safer element. And then happier is then, you know, not just having better customer satisfaction and engagement, but also employees or the teams that you're working with, and then citizens and climate. So it's a more holistic thing. So if we then, you know, actually take a step back and look at, what are we optimizing for? What do you need to then be able to look at to then, you know, help you get to where you want to? Then that's kind of the starting point. And so I think we've lost, we're remembering now again, the fact that there actually is maybe a little bit of a greater purpose for why we need to change ways of working. And those outcomes help to define it a little bit, help to give you a set of measures so that you can actually understand system health. And then help you then lean into, well, what do we then need to change and why? It's then not just org structure. It's actually, well, how does the system work? So how do we organize, you know, people together? How do we think about what is that connection from strategy to execution? And then what key behaviors then need to change? It's kind of those three things. So I think that's what's different. And it's, not about a framework.
I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, I guess I've been witness to a fair or a good amount of agile transformations that didn't lead to safer, sooner, happier. But I think if you're truly trying to go safer, sooner, happier, you're going to grab a whole bunch of agile stuff. It's just the inverse isn't necessarily true. So I like the way that you've all just made the purpose and the happiness part. Like, no one's happy. This is Like, I don't know if you've ever been part of like a big agile program and everyone's miserable. I'm like, I guess we're not being terribly agile because everybody's miserable here. This is like, you know, that happiness quotient. I really like that piece. Do you find that also helps your clients keep their eye on what they're supposed to be doing versus not as sort of like a compass?
Absolutely. Like, I think it keeps everyone in check, to be honest with you, because like, I think the other thing that we've seen here is because we had that ripple in 2017 that I mentioned, there was this sprouting of agile coaches and the demand for agile coaches. And so I think what has happened because of some of the lessons that we've just been talking about, it has caused us all for pause and reflection.
Yeah.
And how do we actually hold our own selves to account? Because the things that we're doing, like, it requires investment to change how you do what you do, just like it requires investment to build new products and services. So if we're not getting value out of that, then we're going to choose to do something different.
Right. Do you buy into the agile is dead? And, you know, there's a lot of like consternation online among, I'll call them agile professionals or agile practitioners. What's your thoughts on that?
So
what
I
would you tell
these
people? Yeah.
Well, so I have seen that. And I think the first thought that comes to my mind is that maybe is a bit of clickbait.
Yeah.
Those words. And so I will answer that, or kind of what I think, maybe in two ways. One is, I don't use the words agile, and I haven't in the last 5 years. And the reason for that is because I find myself trying to explain it more as to breaking down some perceptions and misconceptions because of the experiences.
It's such a rather than word, yeah.
Totally. It's become a little bit of a dare I say, a dirty word. So where I would rather have a conversation on what are we trying to do and why, and how can I help? So I don't think agile is dead. I think we have even a greater need to think about the tools in our kit bag to improve how we deliver better outcomes and create a more humane world of work. And yes, absolutely. There will be things in the agile kit bag, in the lean kit bag, in the human-centered design, in the experimentation, whatever, all the things that we're going to need to be.
And agile adjacent things.
Absolutely. All the things we're going to need to use. So no, I don't think agile is dead.
Awesome. Yeah, I love hearing that. I mean, we've actually, at Agile by Design, we've been pretty inspired. Well, there's two things that inspired us. We did a mission purpose workshop with our team. Nobody used the word agile to describe the mission. It was all about helping people, you know, navigate hostile complexity, dysfunctionality. It was all about equipping individuals to make their working lives better. Like, it's kind of interesting. There's a lot about the customer and all that kind of good stuff, but not one coach used the word agile. And just as I was going through that, that's when I started talking to you and your team. I'm like, oh, so it's not just us. There's like a whole group of people who are kind of like evolving at the same pace. And so I'm really curious to see what happens in the next couple of years and how people's vocabularies change.
Well, me too. And what it does to the profession, right? Because we've got a whole lot of people who have that title, agile coaches. And so I don't know what you're seeing up there, Jeff. So keen to hear, actually. But the evolution I'm seeing down here with some of that role title evolve, examples of that would be ways of working enablement partner. Yeah. System of work, coach, ways of working coach.
Yeah.
Just a couple of examples off the top of my head. Yeah. So I don't know how you're seeing that shift.
The pandemic is still, we're still getting a lot of the, hey, we want to do agile. And the funny thing we do is, I had one client who came and said, oh, we want to help with PI planning and SAFe and everything else. And then when I talked to the person, they had a chance to go through our website and look at our opinions on culture and mindset and outcomes and all kind of the stuff that you're talking about. It turned out they just didn't have the vocabulary. And so I'm seeing that a lot in Canada where people are still using the agile vocabulary. But then once I started talking to the person, he was like, you know what? You're right. This is about culture. This is about mindset. This is about, like, we need some flexibility in the way things, we don't want to just roll out this one thing. He just didn't know how to talk about it in any other way. So I think people are starting to get there, but they're not using the words yet. So they're still asking for an agile thing. And then we are almost unselling them. We're saying, oh no, you don't really want to do that. You kind of want to do this. So we're kind of like just right from the sales. The sales process reminds me of when I was first doing agile. I had to explain it to people.
Yeah.
Now I'm having to explain it as, oh, why it's not, the agile is not, oh, the thing you want is not this agile thing. It's actually something else. So that's what I feel like the market is. It's we're back to explaining the thing again. And then maybe in a few years, we'll be able to actually just get people that want it. But right now I feel like people don't know what they want. So.
Yeah. Well, so that, yeah, I hear you. We're doing a little bit of that the same here. I don't know if we'll ever move away from explaining it, because I think that our problem statement is just going to evolve. So it'll just be explaining the new thing.
Yeah, well, I guess we're used to it as consultants. It's hard to describe to people what you do anyway. So we're kind of there, right? I've been going through a couple of your blog posts. You know what? I bet you I could spend a whole half an hour just on, you know, some of the stuff that you've been writing about. Let's pick on one of these. You talk a lot about strategy. You talked a little bit about it on this show. What do organizations tend to get wrong when it comes to strategy? And what are some things, if you were to give it some advice? Imagine there's somebody listening right now and they're trying to rethink how they do strategy. What's some of the advice that you can give to others out there and how to rethink the way they kind of, everything from the planning to the execution to you name it?
So I am fascinated by strategy because I've always been a delivery person. And so I think the things that I've learned are actually strategy and delivery, or strategy and execution. They go hand in hand. They're one and the same. And so if we don't kind of have both thought through, then we struggle. And so from a delivery point of view, I think the things that I see is when we're actually not clear on the why, the what, like the intent, the outcome that we're going after, which I think is actually strategy, like those from a strategy perspective, those are the outcomes that you want to set at a 3-year, 1-year, quarterly perspective. When we're not clear on that, then what we have is a system or teams that are working on basically, they're doing their best to work on the right thing, but it's very hard to actually be clear on what that is. So the first thing I think would be, how might you think about actually being clear on what those outcomes and those bets are? And the thing that's different, I think, in today's world of work that we need to, I guess, appreciate and understand is we might be able to set out what the outcome is, but how we're going to get there, that needs to evolve. So I think if I then think about annual planning processes, which is where people kind of do their strategy.
Yeah.
So strategy is not annual planning.
I love that fact that strategy is something that gets done and then we can just not worry about it for the next year.
Well, and yeah, exactly. That in itself is a mindset issue.
Yeah.
So, but when you think of then annual planning, it's then everyone is then asked to come up with their bottom up list of projects. Everyone asks for more money than they actually need because it's their one shot of being able to get investment. And then everyone goes forward with those list of projects. Well, already what is a challenge, both from a strategy and a delivery execution point of view, is, well, we haven't probably been clear enough on what the intent is, what is the outcome that we're going after. And I actually can't commit to the list of projects in the detail that is being asked of, 18 months before, because we're actually not sure how we're going to get there. So the mindset shift of how might we be more hypothesis-led and test and learn and take bets and learn from that and perhaps, you know, pivot and adapt as we go. And that's where the heartbeat in an organization then is so important. And to have that regular rhythm to sense and respond and stop and reflect is so important. So it's the first. So there's actually quite a bit in what I just said there, I think. But the first thing is then how do we set the outcomes? How do we then make sure that we've got the right alignment and stop, points along the way? So that's the heartbeat. And then the third thing is, how are we actually? Oh, yeah, go ahead.
You mentioned hypothesis, right, is a big part of that. So you've got to figure, get the alignment. You've got to have you know, a heartbeat of keeping everybody so that you can realign. And then you talk about that hypothesis-driven mindset. That's one there where you don't see a lot of strategies described as hypotheses. And I think you've written about that several times.
I have. And I think this is because often, and this I think is, again, a mindset shift, is we think that we need to have the answer, whereas actually we need to have better questions and then go get, you know, and then go test and learn and see what the feedback is and what the data is telling us. So, again, that's another muscle that we need to develop. And so part of then, you know, strategy to execution is, well, what measures are you putting in place? How are you defining the metrics that you're going after from an outcome perspective? So got to look at OKRs. And then what's the data and the insights that you're then, you know, getting along the way? And are you actually listening and responding to those?
I like one of the taking inspiration from the consulting world, where you have this complication, question, answer. You kind of evolved it to, situation, complication, question, answer. And you evolved it to situation, complication, like hypothesis, experiment or something like that.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a bit? I mean, I thought that was pretty clever. I feel like that should be like 101 for all consultants, you know, born after the year, you know, 1990 or something, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, totally. I would even maybe bring that back a decade.
Well, I was born like well before then, so I'm not gonna say how far, well before. How many decades before?
Totally. So situation, complication, question, answer is a classic. And so I've been using this method for years. And so it was part of my consulting 101 training. Yeah. It's actually a framework or a method developed by Barbara Mentos. So she's
the mental process. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. So she's McKinsey, part of McKinsey. And so they use it as well. And the thing that kind of dawned on me over the last few years is, And maybe it's because I've been a career consultant, but also thinking about how the world of work has changed. And the thing that dawned on me, I do absolutely need to understand the context in which we're operating in. That's a situation. I absolutely need to understand the complication because it's the problem to solve. Yep. The thing that starts to then change is I won't actually know what the answer is because... And perhaps where consultants get criticized a bit is it's a cookie cutter, one size kind of fits all.
And you have to know the answer, right? Come on.
And you have to know the answer, and you're getting paid to know the answer. Whereas I actually don't think anymore we do. There are going to be certain things that, you know, we might be able to understand and think about and test. And so this is where so this even for the work that I'm doing, well, based on the situation, based on the complication, my hypothesis, so I do have a perspective. I think that this might be the way because that's the hypothesis, but we actually need to experiment and test and learn in your context because your context is unique. And this is, you know, I think tied back to the fact that I've never done the same thing twice because I have not had the same organization, the same sector, the same team, the same problem to deal with the same time over and over and over again. I'm actually doing it different.
It'd always be refreshing to get a bit of sameness, but I hear you. People at Deloitte used to be like, what do you mean you don't have any industry major? For anybody listening at Deloitte, you would be like financial services or public sector or whatever. And I was like, that's not going to be that valuable to me. I have to acquire the domain knowledge as fast as I can on the engagement I can so that I can help out. And I kind of love that. I love that kind of concept. I actually think the situation, complication, hypothesis, experiment, I think that should be like drilled into all the consultants because I had Mentor drilled into me like everybody else. It's such a subtle thing. It's such a big mind shift that I love it. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the audience about things you're doing, how to get in touch with you before we wrap up?
So part of the other thing that maybe that is a bit different with Sooner, Safer, Happier is we are very intent on building community. And so part of what our mission and part of our OKRs, in all honesty, so we're tracking this because it is actually an intent of ours, is how are we trying to create as much, do you know the YouTube video with the person dancing
on
the hill?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
So we are trying to create as many of those with as many people as possible to understand how to be thinking about the problem statement of ways of working in a different way and to give people patterns to then apply. And so community being a big aspect. So I think what I would encourage everyone listening is join the community, join the movement, because we've got a regular free to join. It's virtual. It's super easy. Monthly sessions. And Jeff, you were on one just recently. And so we've got kind of regional, you know, so that it fits in kind of time zones and geographies, but sessions where people share. And in Asia Pacific, we've got a mix of case studies. So organizations and leaders that have tried something, they've learned something, they've had some impact. So we have those. We've got topics.
Some of those case studies are crazy. Like, I've seen some of them. They're like, they're companies that you wouldn't have expected were having trouble with this kind of stuff. Like, some of these are quite progressive companies, quite like considered darling in the high tech space, and they're struggling just like the traditional organizations are. So some of the stuff that you guys show, it's a really unique mix of clientele, I think. So
yeah, well, so even a couple examples off the top, Nationwide Building Society. So that's a UK, the largest UK member owned bank. We've had a few sessions. Suncorp, which is an insurance company here in the side of the world, has shared. Airbnb has shared. 7-Eleven just shared a couple of weeks ago. So that's, you know, convenience. And so we have that platform to share learnings, but also to talk about topics like OKRs, like strategy to execution, like value streams. So these are all things that we're all trying to grapple with and even understand what they are. So yeah, I very much encourage anyone to sign up, because we all need to think about how we improve our way of working.
Yeah, I would second that too, having gone to a couple of them. This is definitely where, if you really want to make things change, I think that's a good place to start picking up some new habits and new ideas.
Amazing.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Maria. It was amazing having you. I could probably talk to you for 4 hours more, and the reporter audience would be like, when can we go? But let's definitely do it again soon. I really enjoyed it.
Sounds good. And yeah, you know, I love talking to someone who's, you know, kindred spirit, light-minded. So anytime, Jeff, let me know.
Will do.
Thank you.
Bye now. Thanks again for joining me on Whiplash Agile. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss a single episode. If you want to connect with me, join me on LinkedIn or Twitter/X. And if you like what you hear, or especially if you don't like what you hear, get in touch with me directly at agilebydesign.com.